A Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Katra AI. Welcome to this deep dive. Today we are opening up, well, a really profound book. It's Søren Kierkegaard's 1849 work, The Sickness Unto Death. Still incredibly challenging, incredibly relevant.
Absolutely. And we've got a fair bit of analysis here, but our goal is really to, you know, cut through some of the density.
Yeah, but get to the core knowledge.
Precisely. And this book is crucial because, well, its main idea just flips our usual thinking about human problems upside down.
Right. Kierkegaard argues that the biggest, most fundamental issue isn't physical death or even, say, clinical anxiety as we typically think of it.
No. He says it's a spiritual sickness. He calls it despair.
And that grabs you straight away, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because we often think of deep sadness or feeling lost, that sense of meaninglessness.
Like psychological things, yeah. Maybe burnout, maybe something needing medication. But Kierkegaard digs deeper. He's basically saying this modern feeling of alienation, it's actually a spiritual crisis. It comes from the self failing to be itself. Essentially.
So despair isn't just a mood, it's like a structural problem within us.
Exactly. A kind of inner imbalance, a misrelation, he calls it, where the self is always trying to escape itself, but can't. It's like being trapped in a state of dying, but never actually reaching the end, a living death.
Wow. Okay, so before we dive into that sickness, maybe a word about the person who diagnosed it, Søren Kierkegaard.
Right. Born in Copenhagen, 1813, widely seen as the father of existentialism, a Danish philosopher, theologian. But what makes him unique is how he blends really sharp philosophy with theology and this raw psychological insight.
And it feels personal, doesn't it? You get the sense his writing comes from his own struggles.
Oh, absolutely. We know he grappled with intense melancholy, anxiety, possibly linked to a difficult relationship with his father. And then there was the whole broken engagement saga, which was quite public.
So it's not just abstract theory. It's rooted in his own experience of,
well,
despair.
Very much so. Which might explain why he used a pseudonym for this particular book, Anticlimacus.
Anticlimacus. Why the different name?
Well, the idea is that Anticlimacus represents a kind of idealized Christian faith. A perspective maybe higher, more perfected than Kierkegaard felt he personally occupied.
Ah, so it gives the arguments more weight, more authority.
Kind of. It lets him present the ideas with this uncompromising spiritual force. It really challenges you, the reader, directly. Harder to dismiss it as just one philosopher's opinion, you know?
Okay, got it. So let's unpack the book itself, The Sickness Unto Death. The subtitle is pretty revealing. A Christian Psychological Exposition for Upbuilding and Awakening.
It really is. It sets out this psychological map for becoming an authentic self.
Yeah.
And it starts with his definition of the self, which is admittedly quite dense.
Okay, let's hear it.
He says a human being is a synthesis of opposites, the finite and the infinite, the temporal and the eternal.
Right, let's break that down. So the finite, that's our limits, our concrete reality, like our body, our job, bills, history.
Exactly. The stuff that grounds us in the here and now. The necessary constraints.
And the infinite. That's our potential.
Hmm.
Imagination, spirit, possibilities.
Mm. The boundless part. Yeah. The connection to something beyond the immediate. And the self is this dynamic relationship between these poles.
Constantly trying to balance them.
Ideally, yes.
Hmm.
But despair, the sickness happens when there's a misrelation, an imbalance. When you lean too hard one way or the other.
Okay. Like an internal tug of war gone wrong.
That's a good way to put it. The self gets out of harmony.
So what's the goal? The cure?
The goal is to resolve that misrelation, to find balance. And ultimately, for Kierkegaard, the self finds its true grounding when it rests transparently in the power that established it.
Which he identifies as God.
Yes. And getting there isn't about just thinking your way through it. It requires what he famously calls a leap of faith, an individual radical commitment.
Okay. So let's get into the details of this despair. You mentioned his foundational definition of the self. It's a complex one, right?
Yeah, a relation that relates itself to itself and in relating itself to itself relates itself to another.
Whoa, okay. Basically, we're self-aware and our self-awareness is always in relation to something bigger, transcendent.
That's the idea. We're constantly defining ourselves, relating ourselves back to this grounding power or failing to.
And this leads to the really unsettling part. He says despair is universal.
Mm-hmm. But here's the twist. Most people are in unconscious despair, or what he calls spiritlessness. They don't even know they have the sickness.
How can you be in despair and not know it? Doesn't that sound a bit Like he's looking down on ordinary, happy people.
It can sound that way, but I think his point is more about distraction and conformity. People get so caught up in the everyday and chasing success or pleasure that they avoid the deeper work of becoming a self.
So the busy corporate climber, the person who always entertains, they might seem fine, but spiritually.
Spiritually, they might be asleep. They haven't engaged with their infinite potential. They're living lives of maybe quiet resignation without realizing it. He has this chilling line.
Which one?
The greatest hazard of all, losing oneself, can occur very quietly in the world as if it were nothing at all.
Wow, that is quiet. And terrifying. You could be ticking all the boxes, successful by worldly standards.
And yet be spiritually dying inside, avoiding the necessary pain, the self-reflection needed for growth.
Okay, so that's unconscious despair. What about when people are aware something's wrong? Conscious despair.
Right. And he breaks this down often using that finite infinite balance we talked about.
Okay.
So first, there's the despair of finitude. This is being too grounded, you could say.
Too focused on the concrete. The worldly stuff.
Exactly. Think of someone totally consumed by their job title, their mortgage, social status, the daily grind. They lose sight of the bigger picture, their spiritual potential. They become, you know, a cog in the machine.
Trapped in the necessary, losing the possible.
Perfectly put. Drowning in the mundane, perhaps.
And the opposite.
The despair of infinitude. This is getting lost in possibility. All potential, no action.
The dreamer who never does anything.
Right. The person who has endless ideas, reads all the books, plans everything, but never commits. They live in the what-ifs, floating in abstraction. They become like a ghost, all possibility, but no concrete presence.
So it's about finding that balance again, grounding potential in reality.
Mm-hmm. Balancing that commitment to the concrete finitude with openness to potential infinitude.
Okay. Now, Kierkegaard also talks about despair in terms of the will, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. Two main types of conscious despair related to the will. First, the despair of weakness.
Weakness. How so?
This is when someone is not willing to be oneself. They essentially reject the self they are.
Wishing they were someone else. But I mean their circumstances, their luck, their talents.
Exactly. They see themselves as a burden, a mistake. They want a different hand dealt. They lack the will to accept who they are and work with it.
And the other type.
Yeah.
The opposite of weakness.
Is despair of defiance. This is where someone is willing desperately to be oneself, but in the wrong way.
How can willing to be yourself be wrong?
Because it's done defiantly. He calls this the demonic form. The person recognizes their suffering, their self, but tries to build that self entirely on their own terms, independent of any higher power, independent of God.
Like pure self-reliance taken to an extreme.
Yes. They isolate themselves in their misery, refusing the humility to ground themselves in something beyond the self. It's self-will leading to a kind of self-imprisonment.
Okay, that's intense. Despair of defiance. Where does he go from there? Because this is where it shifts more towards theology, right?
It absolutely does. Part two of the book makes this explicit. Despair, especially this defiant kind, when understood in relation to the divine, becomes sin.
Sin. Okay. How does he define that?
This is crucial. His definition is, sin is despair lived out before God. It's not just breaking a rule. It's a relational failure. It's failing in that task of becoming yourself consciously in the awareness of God or the eternal.
And this is where he pushes back against older ideas, like the Socratic view.
Exactly. Socrates famously argued that wrongdoing stems from ignorance. If you truly knew what was good, you'd do it.
But Kierkegaard says.
Kierkegaard says, fundamentally, no. Sin isn't primarily about knowing. It's about willing. It's a failure of the will.
So it's defiance, not confusion. We often know better, but choose otherwise.
Precisely. It's a conscious or semi-conscious rebellion against the task of authentic selfhood grounded in the divine.
And does this culminate in a kind of ultimate sin?
Yes. He calls it offense, specifically the despair of the forgiveness of sins.
Despairing of forgiveness itself. How does that work?
It's rejecting grace. The person is so locked into their own defiant self-reliance that the very idea of needing forgiveness, of depending on God's grace for salvation, feels absurd or even insulting to human reason and autonomy.
Wow. So they refuse the cure because they can't accept they need it or that it could come from outside themselves.
Exactly. They reject the only way out of the despair they're trapped in.
Okay, let's pull back a bit and look at the big themes here. What are the core messages you should take away from this?
Well, first, definitely the idea of the self as a dynamic task. You aren't just born a self, you have to become one. It's a lifelong project of balancing those opposites within you.
Finitude and infinitude. Necessity and possibility. Authenticity is found in that ongoing struggle, not in some static state.
Right. And second, there's the escalating power of consciousness. It sounds counterintuitive, but the pain of becoming aware of your despair is actually progress.
So feeling that deep anxiety or meaninglessness isn't just bad.
Not necessarily. Unconscious despair is comfortable, like being numb. But conscious despair, the suffering, that's the necessary wake-up call. You have to know you're sick to even start seeking a cure. The pain signals you're becoming spiritually awake.
Which links to the third point, the necessity of the leap of faith.
Mm-hmm. You can't just reason your way to an authentic self, according to Kierkegaard. Analysis helps diagnose, but the cure requires a subjective, passionate commitment, a leap.
Embracing the paradox, the risk inherent in faith.
Yes. And finally, and this is so relevant today, the absolute primacy of inwardness and individual responsibility.
This really pushes back against blaming everything on external factors, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It's a powerful antidote to a victim mentality. Ultimately, your spiritual state, your relationship with the eternal, that's on you. No institution, no society, no therapist can do it for you. The work is internal and individual.
The book is just packed with memorable lines, too. Lines that really cut deep. Let's share a few. We already mentioned this one, but it bears repeating. The greatest hazard of all, losing oneself, can occur very quietly in the world, as if it were nothing at all.
Yeah, that just perfectly captures unconscious despair. The danger of living on autopilot, conforming, being so busy you forget the core task of being human. Losing yourself by inches.
Then there's this call to courage. To dare is to lose one's footing momentarily. To not dare is to lose oneself.
Mm-hmm. This hits hard. Real selfhood requires risk. Stepping out, committing, making that leap, it's scary. You might fail, look foolish. But not daring, that's choosing safety over self. Spiritual stagnation.
Playing it safe is the biggest risk in the long run.
Exactly. And the last one really reframes the whole goal. The opposite of sin is not virtue, but faith.
That's a big shift. It's not just about trying to be good.
No. Because being good can still be rooted in that defiant self-reliance, a kind of pride. The real opposite of sin, that relational failure, that despair before God, isn't just good behavior, it's faith. It's trust, vulnerability, restoring that relationship with the power that grounds the self.
So this is fascinating philosophy, but how can we actually use this? What are the real life applications?
Well, I think Kierkegaard's categories are actually a fantastic tool for, you know, radical self-examination.
Like a checklist for your own life.
Sort of. Ask yourself honestly, where am I leaning? Am I too stuck in infinitude, obsessed with the job, the status, the bills, just being a cog?
Or am I lost in infinitude, always dreaming, planning, scrolling, but never actually doing anything concrete, never committing?
Yeah. Just seeing where that imbalance might be in your own life can be incredibly clarifying. It helps you maybe realign your actions with deeper values.
And it changes how you see difficult times too, right? Those personal crises.
Absolutely. Instead of just wanting to numb out that anxiety, that emptiness, the Sunday scaries, Kierkegaard suggests seeing them differently.
As signs.
As potential signs that unconscious despair is becoming conscious, that numbness is wearing off. And while that's painful, it's also an opportunity, a wake-up call from your deeper self, pushing you towards growth, towards a more authentic path.
It makes me think about modern life, too, his analysis of spiritlessness.
It's incredibly prescient, isn't it? You look at our culture of constant distraction, consumerism, the endless chase for external validation online.
It seems perfectly designed to keep us in that state of unconscious despair, to mask that deeper spiritual disconnection he was talking about.
Yeah. It makes it very easy to avoid the difficult inward work of becoming a self.
So wrapping up, what's the one thing that really stood out or surprised you from revisiting this?
For me, it's that counterintuitive idea we touched on, that despair itself, the sickness, when you actually face it, can be the starting point for real, authentic life.
Right. It's not just the problem. It's potentially the doorway to the solution.
Yeah, provided you have the courage for that leap, it turns suffering into potential fuel for transformation. That's pretty powerful.
I agree. And for me, the lasting insight is just how profoundly he shifts the focus. He makes the case that the real drama of human existence isn't all the external stuff, career, relationships, politics, but this internal spiritual struggle to become a self.
That inward journey, balancing the finite and infinite.
Exactly. And he argues, compellingly, I think, that you can't truly find yourself without grappling with something beyond yourself, something transcendent or unconditional. The search for self and the search for meaning are tangled together.
A challenging thought, but a deeply rewarding one to wrestle with.
See you next time. with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.